Most of you know about my trip home last month to take care of my father. And most of you also know that the doctors advised him against any intervention because his heart was just too diseased. It's exactly a month since I've come back. One of the things that I did when I reached back here was to take the time, sit down in prayer, and surrender my father and this whole situation to God. See, I did not want to live like a faithless man. I did not want to be plagued with anxiety. I know God has a plan. I just wanted life to go on knowing that God is in control. But I think I underestimated my anxiety. I think it was about 2 weeks back. I had a dream. I dreamt that my mom and I were taking Dad to the doctors, and that on the way he got a heart attack and he died. And I remember mom and I just falling over him and just bawling, and that woke me up. I got up with tears rolling down my cheeks. Thank God that it was only a nightmare. But in the morning, what hit me was that even though I had surrendered my father to God, somehow here at the back of my head, there is this fear. And every time I go, for example, to give somebody the last sacraments, there is this feeling that, gosh, I'm doing this for my parishioners, but I may not be there for my own dad. And so I decided, okay, enough is enough. I sat one more time and very, very, very consciously made a surrender of my struggle, my dad, the situation to God. Now, I don't know how it plays out, but I realized that priest or not a priest, on a very human level, I struggle to look at life from God's perspective. I want to live my life in faith, but it's just that something that keeps us from maybe completely surrendering. I don't know what the secret is, but somehow I need to find a way to let God in a stronger way in my life. I debated a lot whether I should share the story, because it's very personal. On the other hand, today's readings, and those of you who struggle, I don't think there's any person here who does not struggle. Today's readings offer great lessons for life. For me to talk about those lessons, I need to talk first about that reading we had from the Book of Wisdom. It's a very difficult reading to understand, and if you don't understand the entire context, it's probably even difficult to know why this reading is included in today's readings. It's strange that the Book of Wisdom talks about Exodus and all the events that happen at Exodus, the Passover and the people coming to the Promised Land. Why does the Book of Wisdom refer to the events of Exodus? Here's a question that the Book of Wisdom is raising. Were the struggles related to the Exodus event necessary? How many Egyptians died? How many lives were lost? There was so much violence and bloodshed. There were so many struggles. Really, was it necessary? And then God, was God showing favoritism towards Israel? by killing all those Egyptians mercilessly? Wisdom answers the question by saying this, that the Exodus event and the misfortunes of the Egyptians should not be interpreted as God's favoritism, but rather as events needed by Israel to learn the lessons of life. The defeat of Egypt and the struggle of the people of Israel in the desert is meant to teach the people the virtues that are needed to live godly lives. And so, really speaking, wisdom is telling us that the Exodus event was Israel's classroom. It's in the context of struggles that they learned how to live life, how to continue to believe in God, how to be a people of God. The Exodus event was meant to teach Israel to live life from God's perspective. Keep this in the background as I go through my 3 points. And my 3 points, I said in the introduction, I want to talk about three virtues. I want to talk about faith. I want to talk about vigilance. I want to talk about prudence. Three things. Let's talk about faith. Like Abraham, whose example is quoted in today's second reading, the author of the letter to the Hebrews is telling us that a Christian must live his or her life in faith. What does faith mean? He's not talking about the diluted meaning of faith. For many people, faith means a belief in some superhuman, a super being up there, right? Some belief in God or whoever we expect God to be up there. That is not what the book of Hebrews is saying. Here is the definition of faith, and see if this makes sense to you, because this is almost like an oxymoron. It's very difficult for us to fathom this. Faith is the realization of what is hoped for and evidence of things not seen. Anybody who is an engineer, anybody who is a scientist or loves science, talk to them about evidence of things not seen. What does it sound like? How can there be evidence of things that you have not seen? How can you realize what is hoped for? Doesn't make sense. I'll give you an example. You ever buy a lottery ticket? Right? If you bought a lottery ticket, and if you began to live as if you won the lottery, what would people call you? What's that called? That's called being stupid. Right? You can't have what you don't have. But Paul, in talking about faith, he talks exactly in that language. Faith is the realization of things hoped for and evidence of things not seen. What does that mean for me? So, for example, I think it means that if I believe that God has called me to this ministry in Dayton, and if God has called me to live so far away from home, then somehow I've got to believe, I've got to hope, I've got to believe that what I hope for is already realized. That would be faith. It's not there yet. My dad is still alive. What is my hope? My hope is that somehow God will take care of my father. Can I realize it? Can I have the evidence that, because even though it's not seen, well, if I can do that, that is what is faith. If there are struggles in my life today, it's because God is giving me the lessons of life. This struggle can be my classroom. After all, didn't Jesus struggle? And so think about the struggles you have. You have buried people. You've lost people you love. You perhaps have lost a child. You've lost a job. Relationships break. Financial struggles come our way. What's new? We all have struggles, but it only makes sense if we look at our struggle from God's perspective. If we look at them as the lessons for life. And so it comes the hard way, the lessons of life, they come the hard way. But today's scripture is teaching us that there is a way to live life, especially when you have struggles, that we don't lose the perspective, God's perspective, and then learn what comes as a result of that. This is the first thing scripture is telling us. Secondly, Jesus talks to us about being vigilant. Be vigilant. You don't know when the Son of Man is coming. Now, very, very often, people look at this passage as a very negative passage. I mean, who among us would like to keep our children on tenterhooks? No, we want to make people feel at ease. But here's Christ telling you, watch out, because you don't know when what is going to happen. There's a very good analogy that I once read in the writings of G.K. Chesterton, the famous author. And he said, think about it this way. Imagine there is a soccer field, small field where children play. And now imagine that on all the four sides of the soccer field, the steep cliff, children are playing. You think anybody could play a game that is relaxed and fun? No. Your fear is that one of the children is going to fall off the cliff, right? And then G.K. Chesterton says, imagine that somebody puts a fence around that field. Now it's a different ball game. Children can be safe and they can enjoy the game. In many ways, what Christ is saying is not something negative. Christ is not saying, live as if you're nervous all the time. That's not the point. In fact, the invitation is the opposite. The fence, even though it's a fence for the children, sets them free. We are people who have been given fences, if you want to call them. What is it? The life and the teachings of Jesus. Listen, we know how to live life. We know what God's will is. We know what God is calling us to as a people or as individuals. And we are in this play field playing the game of life. It would be so difficult to live this life, especially when we struggle. Especially when we struggle. Our struggles have the capacity to discourage us, to make us lose hope, to give up. Especially when we have struggles, Jesus is inviting us to live life a certain way. Which is that way? The way of the cross. And that is the fence that Christ puts around us to protect us, to be safe, that we can still live life meaningfully, that we can still have hope in the midst of our struggles. So being vigilant basically means that I decide that no matter life has to offer, what life has to offer, that I'm going to live my life a certain way. And as far as I am concerned, as far as you are concerned, that way is the way that Christ shows to us who himself struggled. And thirdly, prudence. In the second half of the gospel, Jesus tells his followers that we must live prudent lives. In the Catholic tradition, along with fortitude, justice, and temperance. Fortitude, justice, temperance. Along with these three virtues, prudence makes what we call the four cardinal virtues. Talk about us as a fence. If each one of us could be just and prudent and temperate and having a strength, fortitude, life would be more manageable. So there are four cardinal virtues. The Catechism of the Catholic Church defines prudence as the virtue that disposes practical reason to discern our very good, our every good. So for example, in a particular situation, I know what the good is. How many times do we know what the right thing to do is when something happens? Now, we may not choose to do the right thing because of various reasons, but in most situations, we always know what the right thing is. Prudence is a gift by which I can focus on what is right and then have the courage to choose it, to do it. That's prudence. And the Catechism says the prudent person looks where he or she is going. Jesus defines a prudent person as one who the master on his arrival will find doing the right thing. That's what the gospel reading today is. So this is the crucial difference between a prudent person and an imprudent person. A prudent person does not just let life happen. A prudent person makes life happen. All because the prudent person knows what the ultimate vision is, what the ultimate goal is. Listen, where are we heading? Yes, we have struggles in life. Yes, life is not easy, but where are we heading? We are heading to be with God for eternity. And Jesus is saying, live life that way. Live life that way. Life is not easy. It wasn't easy for him. But look, he takes us to where we are going to be. Jesus does. And the best analogy that Jesus gives us is that of the table. He says, one day you will be with the table with Christ, sitting around. Life will be over, the struggles will be over, and one day we will be with God. This Eucharist is merely an anticipation of what is to come. What happens here will happen in eternity forever, but in so much more glorious way. So let us then decide that we will live our lives with these three virtues in our mind, that we can truly be a people of faith, that we can be vigilant and live life according to God's will. And thirdly, that we will be prudent, that we will know what is good and pursue what is good with all our hearts. And if we do so, one day we will be with Christ at that eternal banquet. People of God said,